This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, and it is the Fan Early Morning Show right here on 93.7 The Fan. I'm Sean Myers taking you for the next 40 or so minutes before Adam Crowley will take the reins courtesy of Studio B in Monroeville at Bowser. Excited to work with Mr. Crowley once again, but I've got a few topics that I want to get to before he takes over, and a little bit later in the show, time permitting, I want to talk about the college football bowl games. We are in the midst of bowl season. Obviously, some of the biggest games upcoming this weekend and then early next week, of course, on New Year's with the college football playoff games and then the championship game about a week after that. Those are still significant, but it feels like just about every other bowl game at this point is pretty much meaningless and almost comical with more players of significance not participating than those who are indeed suiting up for the final time this season. Also, want to talk about the MVP race in the NFL, and I won't get into a very detailed discussion of that because you can go back and forth about all the different guys, and it seems like it changes not just week by week, but hour by hour, as we witnessed if you watched the 49ers-Ravens game. Brock Purdy, before that game, was seemingly the favorite. By the time the game was over, he was down to like fifth on the pecking list, and Lamar Jackson, who defeated Purdy's 49ers, the Baltimore quarterback, now the likely favorite. But beyond that discussion, I want to talk about the positions that are really excluded from MVP. Is it really just a quarterback race at this point for the honors, and looking at some of the positions that have not been acknowledged, some of the legendary players who never won MVP. And if you extend that to not just the MVP, but the greatest of all time discussion in the NFL and maybe even some other sports, are we kind of excluding the very best of the best just based on their position alone? Is it you have to be a quarterback to be the greatest of all time in the NFL, or are you excluded if you're a goalie or defenseman in the conversation in the NHL? If you're a pitcher in Major League Baseball, could you be in that discussion? So that, if time permits, will be another topic. If you want to join in and talk about either of those, feel free to do so. You can reach us and join the conversation, 412-928-9370. Once again, 412-928-9370 to join the conversation right here with me, Sean Myers, on 93.7 The Fan's Early Morning Show. But I want to start by talking about a historic streak in the world of sports, and it pertains to the NBA, but this is going to extend much beyond the world of basketball and really into the realm of all North American professional sports. If you've paid any attention to the NBA this season, and even if you haven't, this story has become so significant that it has probably seeped into your radar. The Detroit Pistons extended their futility last night in the most dramatic of fashions as they lost in overtime against the Boston Celtics, 128-122. And Detroit somehow, some way, found a way to lose that game after they had a 21-point lead. That's not really the biggest story. Obviously, it's almost become comical how they are finding different ways to lose games at this point. Again, that would have been just an absolute stunner because the Celtics are currently the best team in the Eastern Conference, courtesy of that win last night. They are now 24-6. Detroit dropped to 2-29. And at some point, somehow, some way, the Pistons were actually 2-1. They have lost 28 consecutive games. That ties the longest streak in NBA history that actually spanned a couple of seasons. It was the trust the process version of the Philadelphia 76ers that lost 28 straight games over two seasons. The Pistons had already set the single season mark when they lost their 27th consecutive game earlier this week. 2-29. Their winning percentage is 0.65. Just absolutely dreadful. It is far and away the worst in NBA history at this rate. Now, it's still obviously not even to the halfway point of the season. The Charlotte Bobcats, who no longer exist as the Bobcats, they've become the Pelicans, they went 7-59 in 2012. And if you're wondering, well, that doesn't add up to 82 games. Yeah, it was actually a lockout abbreviated season. So they have the worst winning percentage in NBA history of 0.106. Over the course of an entire full season, it's actually the 76ers from 1973 who went 9-73. They with a winning percentage of 0.110. And so currently, the Pistons are on pace to absolutely shatter that record of futility. But they're not the only teams that are, quite frankly, horrible right now. The Spurs and the Wizards this season, each 5-25, 1.67 winning percentage, tied for 13th all-time amongst worst winning percentages. And so it's not just one team in the Pistons who are absolutely dreadful. It is three teams who are amongst the 15 worst based on winning percentage all-time in league history. And a lot of people, I'm sure, saying, I don't care about the NBA. Who cares if there's teams that are just dreadful? Really, I think this extends beyond basketball. It has become an issue across all of the four professional major sports here in North America, where there's teams every year who, quite frankly, are just so bad that you wonder, is it compromising the integrity of the sport to trot out a team just this woeful? And we had this same discussion not even 6 months ago in Major League Baseball about the Oakland Athletics. Now, remember, they at one point were on pace to have one of the worst seasons in baseball history. They actually, I guess in relative terms, finished strong and concluded the season with a record of 50-112, which, because of their strong finish, and I say that pretty sarcastically, they tied for 39th all-time in terms of the worst winning percentage in Major League history. Keep in mind, Major League Baseball history goes back like 150 years at this point to the 1870s or 1880s. And so some of the worst teams ever were before the 1900s even arrived, so you really can't compare that. But the A's this past year, winning 50 games, were one of three teams over the past five full seasons, because you take out the 2020 COVID year where teams only played about 60 games. Over the past five full seasons, or if you want to include that COVID year and go with the winning percentage, over the six seasons total, they are the third team that won 50 or fewer games, joining the 2019 Tigers, who went 47-114, and the 2018 Baltimore Orioles. Keep in mind, the Orioles now one of the best teams in baseball, so they show that you can have a relatively quick turnaround. We saw the same thing with some other teams like the Houston Astros or the Detroit Tigers from about 20 years ago. The 2018 version of the Orioles were 47-115, so they played one more game than the 2019 Tigers. Maybe the Tigers were just so depressed with their season, they didn't even play the last game. What this really means is that just about each and every year now, and the same thing happened in the National Hockey League recently with the Detroit Red Wings, which, by the way, you talk about the Red Wings, you talk about the Orioles and A's and Tigers. These aren't new expansion teams. Same with the Pistons, who have a rich basketball history. These are teams that have done a lot of winning and typically, by and large, have tried to be competitive. Now, the A's this past year, they really were going out of their way to not be competitive because, one, they wanted to leave Oakland and were successful, seemingly, in doing so. They'll be heading to Vegas before long. But it goes back to the question, is it compromising the integrity of sports? And you can apply the same standard to the NFL, where before the season even began, people were wondering, are the Arizona Cardinals trying to become the worst team that they possibly can in hopes that they will be so bad that they will get the number one overall pick, which at that time, and still probably likely will be, Caleb Williams, the quarterback out of USC. It seems like Arizona is probably kind of beyond that conversation now and maybe going to give Kyler Murray an extended opportunity to prove that he can still be the guy. It will likely be the Chicago Bears who are picking first overall by way of the Carolina Panthers. But that's another story. It comes back to my original topic. Are we now to the point where teams are so bad that it's making a mockery of the sport? And if you are a fan of one of these teams, what are you rooting for now? I mean, to see Detroit, even if they get the number one pick this year, when the NBA season's all said and done, and by the way, there's not a slam dunk number one like a LeBron James or a Victor Wembanyama that they will potentially be rewarded with a guy who is just going to completely change the landscape of the NBA. It doesn't seem like that exists this year in the NBA draft. What exactly are you thinking if you watch your team go out and lose its 28th straight game? I believe off the top of my head, they have not won a game since October. And that's right around when the NBA season starts. I mentioned they were actually 2-1, have now dropped 28 in a row. And is there a way to solve this, not just in the NBA, but in the NHL, in Major League Baseball, and even to some extent in the NFL, where I don't think it's as big of an issue? We have seen a team go winless in the Detroit Lions not that long ago, but teams, more or less, if they know that they cannot really be competitive and that they know that the future and the best days are a few years down the road, they go out of their way to basically do whatever they can to minimize the talent on their roster, at least the talent ready to compete at the highest level on their roster. They trade away players. Sometimes, as I mentioned with the Cardinals, they might even start a player at quarterback who is not their best option at the given time. And we're starting to see that now each of the last 2 years. Now with the Denver Broncos, they're not starting Russell Wilson, even though they are not completely out of the playoffs. We saw it last year with the Raiders when they moved away from Derek Carr with a couple of games left in the season. Is there a way to change the system so that teams are in some way motivated to win games, even if they're not going to make the playoffs? Or do we want teams to be basically actively trying to lose games to benefit their future with draft compensation? I have a friend who is somewhat anti-pro sports in America. For whatever reason, he always seems to criticize the NFL and Major League Baseball, and he's not huge on the NHL or NBA either. He is a soccer fan, a soccer snob, as I would say, and European soccer, football, as he would say. And he always says, in European soccer, they have a relegation system where the worst teams are punished by being basically entirely kicked out of the league. That's not feasible in North America. Obviously, the markets of these cities, Detroit, even with their woeful basketball team, they still need a professional basketball team at the highest level. And so that's the case with the Arizona Cardinals in the NFL, or some of these bad teams that we've talked about in the NHL and Detroit, or in Major League Baseball in recent years, also with Detroit. Yeah, it's a recurring theme, by the way. It has been just a brutal stretch for Detroit fans, the 2019 Tigers, the 2020 Red Wings, and this current iteration of the Pistons. These cities depend on these sports teams, whether they are good or bad, for jobs, for entertainment value, for the citizens of that city who have put a lot of money into building these stadiums, things of that nature. So I'm not suggesting that there's a relegation system, because it's just not doable in North America with the professional sports. But there needs to be some way to incentivize teams to not just be as bad as possible and lose as many games as possible. And I know that theoretically the draft lottery is supposed to do that. And for many, many years in Major League Baseball, it was solely based on the standings at the end of the season. There was no lottery. For Major League Baseball, they have changed that to add a lottery, joining the NHL, which has sort of amended the lottery system recently, and the NBA, The NFL, of course, still doesn't have the lottery system. They go by reverse order of finish. So if you're the worst team, you get the number one pick. If you're the best team, at least based on the playoff performance, you get the lowest draft pick in the first round. You know how it works.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The lottery theoretically is supposed to give teams a reason to not be as bad as possible, because even if you have the worst record, you're not guaranteed the number one pick. But if you have the worst record, you have the best odds to get the number one pick. And so even if those odds are only 5% greater than the second or third worst record, you still want to do everything you can to get a generational player to get that number one pick. So really, teams have every reason, if they are not going to make the playoffs, and even if they might have a chance to make the playoffs, if they're not going to make a playoff run, they're almost encouraged and motivated to lose. And so I don't have a great answer. I don't think anyone really has a great answer. If anyone does, feel free to chime in, and I would entertain that, whatever thought you might have on this topic. But it's become just a storyline in itself, how bad teams have become in the major four sports. And I think even just for me growing up 20, 25 years ago, I don't remember teams trying to be this bad. Even if they knew that they weren't going to be a title contender, it seemed like they tried to, by and large, put a competitive team on the field so as to not embarrass themselves, so as to give a reason for their fans to come out. Even if they weren't going to win a championship or likely make the playoffs, they didn't want to be an embarrassment to their town, to their fans. But it seems like that's almost accepted and to some extent encouraged now with the landscape of sports and the fact that if you're not going to win it all, you need to try to lose it all to really bolster your opportunity for future seasons with those high-end draft picks, those game-changing franchise players that often come with the number one or number two or number three with really high draft picks, regardless of the sport. And again, there's a lottery, but that seemingly has not discouraged teams from being as bad as possible. And again, the Pistons are a great example of just futility at the highest level, but they are one of three teams currently in the NBA who are amongst the 15 worst all time in losing percentage. And again, this has happened in Major League Baseball recently. It has happened in the National Football League, and it certainly feels like it's happening in the NFL. So I'm open to any suggestions. How can the landscape be changed to discourage teams from losing, to almost maybe reward teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, that aren't going to be contenders, from still trying their best? Is there maybe a system where you almost go reverse order with the records at the end of the season, where the best teams get rewarded? The problem with that is I think then you go down the same path that we have in college athletics and certainly college football, where it's the best teams every year, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Georgias, the Clemsons, that get not only the riches of success each and every year, contending for conference championships, contending for national championships, making all this money because they're constantly in big-time games and they're getting great attendance at their games, but the reward for that typically correlates directly with recruiting wins. So you win these games, you get all the rewards that come with the victory, and then you bolster your team even more each and every year with the recruiting and with getting top-notch transfers, so that it seems like a never-ending cycle of the best teams will stay the best. The worst teams, conversely, well, they're not getting recruits. Who wants to go play for a team that's, 2-10 at the end of the college football season? And so how do they break out of that streak of mediocrity or that streak of losing when they can't get top-notch recruits? Maybe the transfer portal and NIL has made that a little bit more attainable, that you can kind of bring in a brand new team. We saw that happen in Colorado football and Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, and there was some at least immediate dividends to that, although by the end of the season, they really were not a very good team. We've seen it happen in college basketball where it's a little bit easier because the roster is so much smaller, where you really just need to bring in 3, 4, 5, 6 difference makers in a given offseason to go from a terrible team to a competitive team. But still, by and large, when you think of college football, it's the haves and the have-nots, and that only that gap is just widened each and every year when these perennial powers continue to be powerhouse teams and then get better and better because of their recruiting wins. And the teams that struggle, it seems like they can never really break out of it no matter what, because they're not getting the quality of players they need, because why would a great player want to go to a program that struggles every year? So that's not the answer necessarily either. I think that's by and large what would happen in professional sports if you give the best teams, the teams that have the most success, the best draft picks as well. It just widens the gap. But the system as currently constructed, it is certainly not working as intended either, because teams continue, even if there's a lottery, to do their best to lose each and every year. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to get to, as I mentioned, bowl games and how they have changed forever, not only with opt-outs, but with the timeline, with the transfer portal. And if time permits, I want to talk about if positions limit players from being in discussion for not only MVPs, and this is applying to the NFL currently, but also in the discussion of maybe the greatest of all time in their given sports. The Wake Up Show presented by 84 Lumber. Put your positive attitude to work at 84 Lumber. You can apply at 84lumber.com. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to call in 412-928-9370. Sean Myers here on the Fan Early Morning Show on 93.7 The Fan. Sean Myers with you for another 10 minutes or so here on the Fan Early Morning Show before I turn things over to the incomparable Adam Crowley, who is getting situated, getting comfortable out in Monroeville, Studio B at Bowser. Got to see Adam very briefly this morning. He is excited for this big Friday show forthcoming. Before we get to that, however, got a little bit more time to get to another topic that I mentioned before. And if you want to join the conversation, feel free to do so, 412-928-9370. Whether we're going to talk about my previous topic about futility in sports teams seemingly motivated, encouraged to actively lose if they're not going to be contenders, if there's any solution for that, I'll gladly take calls on that. Also, want to take calls or get your thoughts on college football and the bowl games that have been ongoing, and there's been some notable games recently. Of course, the big ones will kind of be on the horizon this weekend and then into January 1st. And then, of course, the playoff championship about a week after that. It's not a new story that some great players are not competing in these bowls. That's been happening for a while now, probably at least a decade, where we have seen if you are not competing in the playoffs, competing for potential college football championship, many of the top-notch players, guys who will be elite NFL players, or at least high draft picks, first-round guys, sometimes even second, third-round guys, they opt out because they understand it's a risk-reward where the risk is significant if a player suffers a severe injury. And it's happened a few times. You can think of the examples in bowl games where a guy with a surefire NFL future with millions of dollars on the horizon gets injured in a bowl game and it compromises his draft position, maybe even shortens his NFL future. And so that's a major risk. The reward is you play likely one final game with your teammates and you get a chance. For some guys, I guess you could still theoretically improve your draft stock. But knowing that these games are somewhat meaningless by and large, you're probably not really going to boost your stock with one performance like that. And a lot of people will tell you that the Senior Bowl and the Combine and those things, which are not nearly as risky in terms of the physicality and the injury possibilities, those are much better ways to improve draft stock and really get on the NFL scouting radar. So the opt-outs are not anything new. We've dealt with this. It does seem like just about each and every year, there's more and more of them, and there's more and more prominent players who are opting out. And again, that's the case this year, and you could go through and look no further than Georgia and Florida State. It's theoretically supposed to be the biggest bowl game outside of the playoff games because it's number five versus number six, the two teams that just missed out. And of course, everyone says, oh, Florida State should have been in the playoffs. They could potentially have a right to claim a national championship if they win their bowl game because they will finish the season as a undefeated Power 5 program. But I could tell you, based on what we've seen with opt-outs, it doesn't seem like it's a massive game for either Georgia or Florida State. But it's not just the opt-outs. Now there is a second hurdle for teams for bowl games, and that is the transfer portal and the timing of it. When the transfer portal opens, when it closes. Now, there's a second transfer portal a little bit later on. I think it's in a couple more months. But the one ongoing currently, it's really forcing players' hands, making them make that decision before most of these bowl games are being played. Do I want to stick around, play in a, by and large, meaningless bowl game, and then maybe be left out high and dry because so many other players are in the portal and then find new homes, and I don't want to be at this school next year. I want to move on. I want to go somewhere else, which just seems like, I don't know what, maybe 25% of college football players end up transferring at some point in time. Certainly, it feels like at least that many. And the number continues to grow each year. So what you're getting now is players who don't want to wait around, don't want to play in the bowl game, even if they're going to have a potentially prominent role with their team, knowing that they want to go somewhere else, or even just test the waters potentially to go somewhere else. So you get, let's for instance use Kyle McCord, the quarterback for Ohio State. He was the starter the entire season. He had, by and large, a good season. Maybe not a great season, certainly not by Ohio State quarterback standards, not a great season, but a darn good season. And Ohio State, although not in the playoffs, still a prominent bowl game, still a marquee matchup because it's Ohio State. They lost just one game by one score to Michigan. I think you could even argue that they should have been in the playoff discussion. They weren't. They miss out. McCord, who was certainly going to be their starting quarterback in the bowl game if he was still in a Buckeyes uniform, decides to leave the program. And he already has a new home with Syracuse. I mentioned Florida State and Georgia. Florida State's backup quarterback, who probably would have been their starter because, remember, their actual starting quarterback got injured late in the season. That's probably the biggest reason why they are not in the playoffs. He decided, is it worth sticking around until the new year to play in a bowl game that really doesn't matter and then try to transfer knowing that most of the quarterback spots will have been filled by that point? So Florida State's quarterback, likely their starter for the bowl game, he decides to enter the transfer portal. He's not going to play. But even the teams in the playoffs, Texas's backup quarterback, Malik Murphy, he has already landed at Duke. So Texas, if something happens to Quinn Ewers, they're going to have to go to what would have been their third-string quarterback in a playoff game. The timing of the transfer portal combined with the schedule for bowl games, something likely needs to change, or it will just continue to make these bowl games so irrelevant, because not only do you have the best players with NFL draft futures opting out, you now have even the backups to those players or the third string options behind some of those players. They are entering the transfer portal and not playing in the bowl games either. And many times they're already at a new school. Now they can't play for that new school in a bowl game. For instance, as I mentioned, Kyle McCord's at Syracuse, Malik Murphy's at Duke. They can't play for those schools this year in the bowl games. They wouldn't anyway if they had the option, but they can't officially play until next season. But what it's done is just created a system that is doomed to fail and that continues each and every year to make bowl games less relevant. And really, to be completely honest, it's even affecting some of the playoff teams, as I mentioned, for instance, Texas in the bowl games, where they have some notable players on their depth chart who decide to transfer before those playoff games even take place. That's going to do it here on the Fan Early Morning Show. I will turn things over to the one and only Adam Crowley momentarily, but for now, signing off, Sean Meyer saying thank you so much for tuning in. We'll continue after this quick break right here on 93.7 The Fan. Sean Myers with you for another 10 minutes or so here on the Fan Early Morning Show before I turn things over to the incomparable Adam Crowley, who is getting situated, getting comfortable out in Monroeville, Studio B at Bowser. Got to see Adam very briefly this morning. He is excited for this big Friday show forthcoming. Before we get to that, however, got a little bit more time to get to another topic that I mentioned before, and if you want to join the conversation, feel free to do so, 412-928-9370, whether we want to talk about my previous topic about futility in sports teams seemingly motivated, encouraged to actively lose if they're not going to be contenders, if there's any solution for that, I'll gladly take calls on that. Also, want to take calls or get your thoughts on college football and the bowl games that have been ongoing, and there's been some notable games recently. Of course, the big ones will kind of be on the horizon this weekend and then into January 1st, and then, of course, the playoff championship about a week after that. It's not a new story that some great players are not competing in these bowls. That's been happening for a while now, probably at least a decade, where we have seen if you are not competing in the playoffs, competing for potential college football championship, many of the top-notch players, guys who will be elite NFL players, or at least high draft picks, first-round guys, sometimes even second, third-round guys, they opt out because they understand it's a risk-reward where the risk is significant if a player suffers a severe injury. And it's happened a few times. You can think of the examples in bowl games where a guy with a surefire NFL future with millions of dollars on the horizon gets injured in a bowl game and it compromises his draft position, maybe even shortens his NFL future. And so that's a major risk. The reward is you play likely one final game with your teammates and you get a chance. For some guys, I guess you could still theoretically improve your draft stock. But knowing that these games are somewhat meaningless by and large, you're probably not really going to boost your stock with one performance like that. And a lot of people will tell you that the Senior Bowl and the Combine and those things, which are not nearly as risky in terms of the physicality and the injury possibilities, those are much better ways to improve draft stock and really get on the NFL scouting radar. So the opt-outs are not anything new. We've dealt with this. It does seem like just about each and every year, there's more and more of them, and there's more and more prominent players who are opting out. And again, that's the case this year, and you could go through and look no further than Georgia and Florida State. It's theoretically supposed to be the biggest bowl game outside of the playoff games because it's number 5 versus number 6, the two teams that just missed out. And of course, everyone says, Florida State should have been in the playoffs. They could potentially have a right to claim a national championship if they win their bowl game because they will finish the season as a undefeated Power 5 program. But I can tell you, based on what we've seen with opt-outs, it doesn't seem like it's a massive game for either Georgia or Florida State. But it's not just the opt-outs. Now there is a second hurdle for teams for bowl games, and that is the transfer portal and the timing of it, when the transfer portal opens, when it closes. Now, there's a second transfer portal a little bit later on. I think it's in a couple more months. But the one ongoing currently, it's really forcing players' hands making them make that decision before most of these bowl games are being played. Do I want to stick around, play in a, by and large, meaningless bowl game, and then maybe be left out high and dry because so many other players are in the portal and then find new homes, and I don't want to be at this school next year. I want to move on. I want to go somewhere else, which just seems like, I don't know what, maybe 25% of college football players end up transferring at some point in time. Certainly, it feels like at least that many. And the number continues to grow each year. So what you're getting now is players who don't want to wait around, don't want to play in the bowl game, even if they're going to have a potentially prominent role with their team, knowing that they want to go somewhere else, or even just test the waters potentially to go somewhere else. So you get, let's for instance use Kyle McCord, the quarterback for Ohio State. He was the starter the entire season. He had, by and large, a good season. Maybe not a great season, certainly not by Ohio State quarterback standards, not a great season, but a darn good season. And Ohio State, although not in the playoffs, still a prominent bowl game, still a marquee matchup because it's Ohio State. They lost just one game by one score to Michigan. I think you could even argue that they should have been in the playoff discussion. They weren't. They miss out. McCord, who was certainly going to be their starting quarterback in the bowl game if he was still in a Buckeyes uniform, decides to leave the program. And he already has a new home with Syracuse. I mentioned Florida State and Georgia. Florida State's backup quarterback, who probably would have been their starter because, remember, their actual starting quarterback got injured late in the season. That's probably the biggest reason why they are not in the playoffs. He decided, is it worth sticking around until the new year to play in a bowl game that really doesn't matter and then try to transfer, knowing that most of the quarterback spots will have been filled by that point? So Florida State's quarterback, likely their starter for the bowl game, he decides to enter the transfer portal. He's not going to play. But even the teams in the playoffs, Texas's backup quarterback, Malik Murphy, he has already landed at Duke. So Texas, if something happens to Quinn Ewers, they're going to have to go to what would have been their third-string quarterback in a playoff game. The timing of the transfer portal combined with the schedule for bowl games, something likely needs to change, or it will just continue to make these bowl games so irrelevant, because not only do you have the best players with NFL draft futures opting out, you now have even the backups to those players or the third string options behind some of those players. They are entering the transfer portal and not playing in the bowl games either. And many times they're already at a new school. Now they can't play for that new school in a bowl game. For instance, as I mentioned, Kyle McCord's at Syracuse, Malik Murphy's at Duke. They can't play for those schools this year in the bowl games. They wouldn't anyway if they had the option, but they can't officially play until next season. But what it's done is just created a system that is doomed to fail and that continues each and every year to make bowl games less and less relevant. And really, to be completely honest, it's even affecting some of the playoff teams, as I mentioned, for instance, Texas in the bowl games, where they have some notable players on their depth chart who decide to transfer before those playoff games even take place. That's going to do it here on the Fan Early Morning Show. I will turn things over to the one and only Adam Crowley momentarily, but for now, signing off, Sean Myers saying thank you so much for tuning in. We'll continue after this quick break right here on 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.